Dagoberto Gilb's new collection of short stories, Woodcuts of Women, is about Mexican-American men living in the Southwest, marginally employed, handymen, painters, and factory workers. Gilb knows his terrain. He lives in Texas and worked construction for 16 years before writing full-time. The men in his fiction suffer from a kind of existential rootlessness, and they seek refuge from it in women. Here's Dagoberto Gilb reading from his new book, Woodcuts of Women.
I'm in a city called El Paso. I could point it out on a map. Right here, here it is. There is longitude, latitude. For most, this is enough, a satisfactory explanation. But say we don't use all these imaginary concepts. Say there's no west of, or east of, or north of, or south of. Forget all that. Forget these legalistic boundaries. No Texas here. No Mexico there. No New Mexico. Forget all that. Here's a river. Here are mountains, a sky above, night, day, sun and moon. Where there are people, there are buildings and streets and walkways. There are colorful and not-so signs with messages that can be reduced to words. Eat, sleep, money, work, play. Away from those and away from the buildings and people. The brown soil is rock even at its surface. The vegetation is sparse, gray-green, low to the ground, defensive. There is little water away from that river. I walk on the streets or drive, think about what I did before, how maps work. I would open them and trace a road and I'd get there and I'd think I had discovered something, that I knew where I was. I'd go into a bar, sit on a stool facing mirrors, reflecting mirrors and bottles, and think how this offered not just solace, but solution, or drugs, or love, or sex. I remember when I'd meet a woman, that old answer, the first answer, find a woman, lose myself through a woman, find myself, here I am.
Dagoberto Gilb is the author of a novel, The Last Known Residence of Mickey Acuña, and a previous book of short fiction, The Magic of Blood. When I spoke with him recently, we talked about an essay he wrote for The New Yorker last March about his mother, who worked as a model in department stores. When he was very young, Gilb sometimes went with her backstage on her jobs.
God, my first memories around women that are in varying, you know, states of dress and undress always. I mean, I still find myself, like, the cosmetic counters and these things are much more, when I'm sort of used to those odors, and I find myself much more comfortable. I'm a, you know, my last girlfriend, I mean, it was kind of fun for her because she was, like, a girly girl, and she liked those things, and I sort of, like, I was, like, fun for her because I could hang out.
The other thing that is so erotic about that situation must have been for you over and over again, being in this place where women were treating you as if you weren't looking at them.
Or, well, I was too young. You know, I mean, it's erotic, but you're not like in the, you know, male way erotic. It's just a whole body feeling of, and I know that if anything messed me up, that, because I always had women kind of fawning over me and, you know, saying truthfully or lying, probably just to be sweet, how cute you are. You're, you know, all these little things are just constantly around you, touching you. And I did grow up in that respect totally abused.
Well, your mom was pretty much a single mom, right?
Right.
Your father split early.
Well, they divorced real young, yeah.
He was German?
Well, German-American. I mean, he grew up in East Los Angeles. He spoke Spanish, as a matter of fact. I mean, that's how he met my mom. My mom grew up next to the industrial laundry in downtown Los Angeles, where my dad became the floor super. He was the big Anglo guy that's, you know, he became a Marine that spoke Spanish and, you know, was kind of like he could hire people and fire people and not blink. And you needed to do that at this job. It was like an industrial laundry, you know, probably 25, 30 trucks and 350, 400 people were employed.
Your mom married a couple of times.
Right.
And there were a lot of boyfriends in and out of the house. Were you the kid who was always asked to go away? Give them
no,
privacy?
No, sometimes. Yeah, no, I learned to do that on my own. But the bad thing, I guess you could say, is that she left me alone. I mean, she expected me to be alone. If this macho thing is stuck to me, it's also that she told me that all the time, that you have to take care of yours. I mean, she just did that. She believed in it, and she just didn't act any other way. She wasn't even consciously avoiding her, you know, her motherly duties. She just didn't see them. This is like, you take care of, you're a man, you're going to be a man. And so I learned that really quickly. I took care of myself. She didn't cook, you know, she wasn't into any of that stuff. And I took all those responsibilities on myself.
You write that you were a big kid, too. And for a woman who still looked very young and beautiful to be seen around with this big boy, half man, probably cramped her style a little bit.
No, you know, that's where she never did this. I mean, but we'd go out and men would come up. Or, you know, men would try to talk to her, you know, and sometimes she'd, like, you know, slough them off, and sometimes she'd be polite, and it would always aggravate me, absolutely aggravate me. It's like, no, just can't we just be alone? I just don't want this. And it was, she always got that, even in later life when it wasn't about her beauty, it was just people.
Now, it's kind of hard to keep track of her liaisons, but she did marry a man, all of a sudden, a guy you'd never heard of or even met before, an electrician. Right?
Right.
What happened there? What was
Well, here? Actually, this is like the opening of this a novel that I'm working on. It sort of parallels this. I mean, my mom got in trouble. She often would get herself in trouble.
Financial trouble?
Financial. God knows, you know, almost, can you say sexual about your own mother? I suspect that was what it was.
What do you mean by that?
Well, what I think had happened, I mean, you know, what I presume happened, because it's not something I could just directly talk to her about. I think she had sort of a relationship with this man that she was working in a dental office at this point in her life. She's in her 30s. And I think she was stealing money okay. at the same time. And he was a drunk. And apparently he'd shot somebody. Whatever the reason for that was, I wasn't told. But I did hear enough about that. Well, then one night, you know, he came drunk. I was alone, as I often was. And he's pounding on the door. Beating on the door as hard, you know, to get her. And he's just, you know, he's trying to knock the door in. And, you know, I had a friend of mine, his dad was a cop. You know, so I called the cop. He comes over, the door flies open. I was expecting a gun. I had a big old knife, bigger than me, it seems, as I recall. It was just the hugest knife, and I was kind of fearless at those, you know, I was like not afraid of people, but scared of the whole situation, just, and and then within a week she was married and changed her name.
So she needed a protector.
I guess that's what happens. You do this, and she was miserable. Many years later, she's married to this other man. And, you know, all the things you do is, and it's not even that many, but in your own consciousness, I was like 17 now. And that's like huge distance from when I was 13. Her life, 4 years had passed. But, a new husband, and she just, that little 2.5 year period of just her, it was her hell. I knew it was her hell. It was so bad, I never was there. I just started, like, never was there. I'd stay any place but there.
The man she later married, he was a firefighter.
Fireman, yeah.
Fireman.
Yeah.
And you describe him as talking too loud. He was loud talker, which just, he's imprinted in my mind, very clearly.
Although I've been lately worrying that I'm too loud. So but anyway, no, he.
You never liked him.
You know, I hate to say that too, but it's true. I guess the truth is I didn't. When she was dating, she dated him. He was like he was about 10 years younger, and he just bored me. I mean, he was really nice, but there was just something so, he could take a, you know, like a 25-word editorial, you know, those people that write letters to the editor, they're just so dumb and yet they're so self-righteous. He take that boring 25-word thing and make it 250. Oh, man, it was like torture. He took very good care of my mother, though. I mean, too good a care, actually. He was, he made a lot of money. Firemen make good money in L.A.
I think once, though, before they were married, your mother asked you to leave the house because they wanted the place to themselves, or she expected you to leave, and you wouldn't go. You just staked your claim, and he was there and
Yeah, that
took exception.
That's another one of those little Vivian where he picked up the chair and I was in it. And he was a big guy. He's a big guy. And I wasn't going. I wasn't moving. And that was an incident.
Your mom hit you for that. He never hit you.
No, well, my mom would hit me definitely.
She did.
Oh yeah, that was like totally often. She wasn't afraid to hit me and break things on me, actually. She was like, those were the wooden hanger days. And she'd hit me and they'd break.
Oh, that's what you went for?
Yeah, they'd break against me. And I got used to that. I learned those were like moments of her pain. And, you know, I'd get the wax and then she'd disappear.
You eventually left town, left Los Angeles, left your mother, and you lost touch with her for how long?
Oh, a long time. Just, you know, I was just angry. I didn't, you know, how many years? At one point, it was like 8 years that I didn't even speak to her. They didn't do anything. I mean, you know, this is the bad. She never gave me money. Well, the worst thing that happened, I was in college. And I worked really hard. I have a son that got accepted to Stanford. And I always joke, well, I got accepted to junior college. But when I was in junior college, I worked, you know, I worked full-time, you know, at a JCPenney's department store as a stock clerk, 36 hours. Actually, it's 40 because I worked on Sunday and that was double time. So I always worked, but nobody would ever, and even as all they're making money, I always thought it was like Coke money. My mother was like a 13-year-old going through money. She was just out of control, but never a dime to me. One time I'm in college, and I needed to buy some books, so I asked her to send me, if I could borrow $35. I remember it was $35. I borrowed it from a guy that I knew was generous enough to loan me the money. And she said, oh yeah, I'll send it to you. And then, you know, it doesn't come, and then I call again. And, you know, didn't you get it? Well, I'll send another one if I have to. And then it was like, then after that, it dawned on me that this is what I'd heard her do all of my life. I mean, she always had a gazillion bills. I mean, she was always buying some clothes, always something was happening.
So she was treating you like a bill collector.
Oh, I felt like a bill, and I was so angry. And it never did come, and that was it. That was like the last time I ever had a conversation with her about money.
Did she know you were a writer?
Not till the very end. Well, one time I tried it out just for the heck of it, just to see what she would do. But it's not really fair. I mean, she didn't know what that meant. She had no idea. She also knew I went to college. And, you know, I studied philosophy and religion in college. That she, you know, they just thought, you know, another bum thing. What do you do that for? What is that going to do? And I didn't have any answer because I didn't really know either. I mean, it wasn't like anybody I knew did that. And I didn't know what kind of job at that point when I was in college. I mean, I wanted to be this half-breed Hegel, the first Chicano Hegel.
Well, you decided that you wanted to be smart, right?
Right, I wanted to be smart.
So you just had to go about being smart.
Yeah, no, I totally wanted to be smart. I just really admired smart people, and I just fell in love with the idea of books and smart, and I just was a sponge.
How did you get back in touch with her?
Well, I had children, and she tried to, you know, she was like not grandma. You know, she didn't know how to do that. I mean, she didn't do the mom thing, so it was too much to expect the grandma thing. But I tried, and, you know, at some point I did get in touch with her, and we, you know, I lived in L.A., and so, you know, finally, you know, my little kids would see them. I wouldn't let them stay with her or him very much. Never without me around, but... But at the end, when she was dying, is actually when I finally told her. It's really one of these spectacular things. It's like a telenovela, you know, a soap opera ending that, I feel like really graced that I got to do that. But at the very end, I went and I knew she was dying. He didn't think she was dying. I mean, that.
Her husband.
Yeah, in that respect. He's like a good guy. He just really loved my mom, that's for sure. So that's the wonderful thing. And he didn't think she was going to die. He thought she'd be fine. But, you know, they're telling you positive things, and he didn't have the depth to think. They're just saying these things to make me feel. And I just called and found out, so I ran out. And, you know, she had the masks on and all this stuff. And, you know, it was clearly like a matter of when it was going to happen, not that it wasn't going to happen. It was going to happen. And then it's when I decided just to tell her. And she couldn't even speak. And I just told her about, you know, my writing career, the stuff that had happened. And, you know, you go back. And it was really clear to me that, you know, we were really close. I mean, I am her. All my chaos is basically her chaos. I totally inherited her wild, you know, and joy. Actually, I'm real happy. I see a lot of the joy that she had. I have tons of joy in me.
Dagoberto Gilb's new collection of short stories is Woodcuts of Women. This is Fresh Air.